This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves.
Today, we're going to be talking to Wes Jackson. Now, Wes is the president of Brick Arts Media. Wes is also the founder of the Brooklyn Hip Hop Festival. And you've just been just somebody that's just been in the music space. So before we get into talking to you about your vision for Brick and other things, talk to us about what kind of art moves you. What is it that you like?
Well, first, thanks for having me, Eli and Tony. What art moves me is, I think it would be a layup to say, obviously, music moves me in a very visceral way. That's what I've dedicated my life, my professional and very much my academic scholarship life to.
And then I want to know, what about music just informs your entire journey, meaning your journey from the Brooklyn Hip Hop Festival to now a Brick?
I think, you know, music has definitely, you know, informed my journey. I think there's something about, you know, I think that spoken word, you know, I was an English major, as we were talking about before we started. So the written word, so I think the written word then turned into the spoken word, to the sung word, kind of hits a part of my brain that makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's easy for me just to comprehend it. But as I think about my first answer, what really kind of speaks to me also is the art that I don't normally consume. So when you think about my journey here at Brick, what really excites me is about the art that I don't normally consume. So a lot of the visual art, you know, sort of on the other side of this, you know, window is the, you know, is our gallery. So I think a lot about the visual art. I've actually had, you know, a sick, probably pound for pound, the same transformative experience as looking at visual art. And I can think about a particular time that sticks out in my mind at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, looking at a Jackson Pollock, you know, and it was like one of those huge sort of things. And you sat there in the middle and just being kind of overwhelmed in a similar way that I've been overwhelmed listening to like a J Electronica song or a De La Soul song. And then now being here and working with, you know, being exposed to more theater arts and sort of talking, having the privilege to being in conversation with, say, someone like a Lynn Nottage, right? Who we
absolutely
all know.
Wonderful, wonderful playwright.
Right.
Fabulous.
And then saying like, okay, well then to just try to keep up with conversations with her, I need to go to the theater more.
And
then
good for you.
Well, yeah, you just don't want to be embarrassed. I just don't want to, you know, you just want to try to be. Yeah. They're intellectually with her of trying to go to the theater and being like, well, now this is moving me. So what I hope this gets to your question. So that has been the gateway of saying, well, wow, I'm getting moved in different ways. And I think what I love about Brick is that it is a bit of a playground where, you know, you come in this way and then it's like, oh, go here, go there and come there. And then, you know, then you go home and like, well, I've just consumed many different.
And before we get into the playground aspect, I just want to ask one more thing about your major in English. I mean, that's an interesting major. I mean, you were also a football player back in college. So why English? I mean, is that what turns you on? Or was
I think the English, I don't know. You know, I'm English major. I'm actually a very slow reader. So I have like stacks of books that I go by green light and buy books. And then it's like the stacks because it takes me so long to get to them. But I'm a big mouth. I like to talk. And when I went to University of Virginia, I wanted to get into mass communications. And it was just such an old school school. They didn't have it. And I went to my dad and I said, what do I do? And he said, well, you're a good writer and you're always going to need to be able to communicate. And there's nothing more powerful than the written word. He said, go be an English major because you're always going to need to be able to write. And that's how I did it. And
that's very stupid.
I love your dad's stories. Your dad sounds like he's just incredible. Yeah, he's such incredible.
Yeah, that's my man. He's always been my guide.
So you're a new leader at Brick. Brick's like a 40-year-old organization. It's in a lot of ways a catalyst in the culture and media landscape. It presents, you know, and incubates artists, creators, and performers. We want to talk a little bit about how you, about becoming the president of BRIC. You know, how does that feel to be in this interesting position? Not only that, it's also one of the major institutions, I would say, in the new cultural district, right? So there's some weight to that, I assume.
I mean, it feels great. You know, it's a lot of work. Obviously, it's a big organization, you know, biggest organization that I've run. I have an entrepreneurial background. But it's almost back to sort of playground metaphor I had before. You got to remember what you're doing, you know, any given day. I think, you know, Tony would appreciate this. It's a lot of work, but when you look at the calendar, we're talking about concerts, and then we're talking about TV shows, then we're talking about podcasts, then we're talking about art galleries, and you go home like, oh, I'm so tired. And it's like...
Mental fatigue might set in with all of that, right?
Yeah, but it's like, you know what? Yeah. But you know, shut up. You know,
talk to yourself correctly, right? Talk to yourself correctly, right?
It could also be inspiring too.
It's inspiring. Yes. It's like, but what for me, like what better job could there have been? It's really kind of sometimes back to be overwhelming, like, wow, this is really great what we're able to do. And being in the district, and you know, you have all these great people, the BAM, and then you got the museum up the block and the library, and everybody's so, you know, been so welcoming to me in the building. And it's like, we're here.
Exactly.
And there's this moment of like, you know, and there's really, to be honest, all of these Black leaders around.
Absolutely. You know. I want to talk to you about, you said activate the building around hip hop. What does that look like?
We came in here, said, listen, this is 23, is a once in a lifetime. There's not going to be another year to do this. So I brought in a team, you know, Antoine, who's our, Dr. Antoine Hardy, who's our scholar in residence. I said, let's take our initiatives and weave them in to what BRIC has already done, you know, with 40 years of excellence. So BRIC TV, community media, BRIC Celebrate Brooklyn, and let's work collaboratively. So what we're doing is, just activating what people have already been doing with this idea. So it's really been kind of like a galvanizing principle to say what, you know, the town hall that we had just last week. So these are community issues that say, you know, Ro Johnson and her team on BRIC TV have been doing with the borough president's office. Oh, well, we have similar thoughts that seem to be in line with what you've normally been doing with the unhoused. We are thinking about Rap on Trial and critiques of the criminal justice system. Ro's like, I'm with that. Like, oh, well, can we be friends? And she's like, absolutely. And now,
Now
we're activating. Now it's like Wonder Twin Powers, like old Super Friends show. Now we have two really smart people who are now doubling their power. And I'm just sitting back.
Making it a synergistic, right?
And it's double the fun. So it's really awesome.
Do you have any thoughts about or ideas about, you know, bumping up this idea of an incubator? So it becomes, I wouldn't say like Second City TV, but like it's a place to go if I have a great property or a play I want to, or a TV show I want to do that has potential to be, you know, a real property. Is there something, can you talk a little bit about that?
I think BRIC is a one-of-a-kind entity of saying we have almost all of the tools of a sort of next-level studio, let's call it, as it were. But we're not bound by sort of the late-stage capitalist of deliverables, right, of delivering to the shareholders at all costs, right, the sort of very toxic. We have these really nonprofit, community-driven principles, right? We are here to deliver to the community and to our board members what it is. So we can come in here and say, hey, I have this idea. It's kind of malformed and I don't have any money. Great. You're exactly who I'm looking for. I'm not looking for someone who's in here. I want 18, 24-year-old white males and I want to slice it this thin. So we're one of the few places you can come in here curious and broke. And we're here to serve.
I'll amen the broke part.
Yeah. And it's tough in this world, right? It's tough in this capitalist society where you can say that. And I think we are like, you know, the library, the parks, where we are not looking for a transaction. We actually are anti-transaction. If somebody said, I'm coming in here with, and I'll pay you, you know, to do this. We're like, we don't do that here. So we are a true incubator, and our goal is for you to get so big that you outgrow us. So I want you to get so big and get out of here.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Wes Jackson, president of BRIC and co-founder of the Brooklyn Hip Hop Festival. And you were just talking about people just coming here and then not needing this place anymore because they have achieved something. They're able to move on. And I find that really, really exciting. Is there any other closing thought you want to give us with that?
It's that, and we want to grow with you. We don't certainly want to kick you out of here, right. But we want you to be excellent. We'll grow with you as much as we can. But but our goal is for you to be great. And if you need to move on to your artist and you go to Brooklyn Museum, or if you're a filmmaker and you need to go on to HBO, that is success for us.
I love the idea of growing with, because I think this organization deserves that. You know, as they nurture artists, you know, what's wrong with paying it forward and paying it backward, so to speak, in the same way. I think that's real important.
Right. And that's what we do ask for. We ask when you go get your Grammy, your Oscar, just shout us out so we can open up the door for the next person.
Absolutely.
To come in.
Absolutely. I wanted to kind of circle back to hip hop in terms of the recognition that it gets. 15 years ago, it was in one place, and now it has moved into something that is now 50 years old. Can you talk to us about some of the stumbling blocks along the way and how it was misunderstood? And I'll go a little deeper than that. You know, I love some rap music, but then there's other rap music with the incessant use of the N-word and all of that. Meaning, how have you been able to make this something that's just positive?
But I think it's almost a bit of nomenclature, is that, you know, I'm a proponent of hip hop music and culture. You use the word rap music.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I think it's, and we can, and people debate this. I think rap music is what you may hear on a hot 97. That's really, it's almost like Peter Luger's versus McDonald's, right? Huh. It's a hamburger. It all comes from a cow,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But you would never confuse a Peter Luger steak and
with
a
McDonald's.
Big Mac,
right?
You have to be very clear of what you're talking about. One is created for mass consumption. You should not eat it every day. It will kill you. It, you know, supersize me, right? It's very toxic. That is somewhat, I don't want to call rap music toxic, but that is the business model of commercial radio, of commercial TV. It is not meant for nourishment. It is meant for mass consumption. It is like candy. That is not what I am here to promote. I am a much more of a purveyor of grade A prime rib, Peter Luger, you know, $80, come for your birthday to my fellow chef in here. I want to give you an excellent experience. It has been conflated by some, right? And usually McDonald's wants to be like, Peter Luger, Big Mac, Peter, it doesn't matter. Just come on in. So I think it's been confused on purpose. So this is where you are sitting here saying, like, rap music, hip hop, and like, we're getting mixed up. So I think what has happened is people have realized that, you know, something like a flash in the pan artist that was always created just really to make money and is here is gone one day is very different from, you know, a Kendrick Lamar who takes time to nurture and create, or a SZA who's really pouring her heart into her music is very different. So what has happened over time, the artists who have endured and really care about the culture and the people are starting to separate, you know, like the eggs from the yolks. I'm doing bad with the cooking metaphors. So now, at over 50 years, now we have the data to look back and say, like, oh, there's a difference. So sometimes I just want to get wild on a Friday night, and that's for that. And then this is for Sunday for cleaning the house, and this is for when I'm with my partner, and this is for when I need inspiration. And like anything else, there's a complexity, there's a tapestry, you know, of the culture, and there's something in the South, there's something from the West, there's something in Japan, and now we can sit back in 50 years and appreciate it and debate it and argue and like what we don't like.
So is the rap music, was that propagated by the music industry? Or what's the split or dynamics of that? Because fascinating.
Yeah, I think rap music is very much the sort of short tail, the top of the tail, the 1%, again, mass consumption, maybe hypersexualized. It hypersexualizes women. It perpetuates the oversexualized black male.
Interesting.
Right? It's violent. It's America.
It's shallow.
It's very shallow. Yeah, this is America.
But it's also
it
toxic.
Perpetuates right. the myths mm-hmm. that I am one dimensional. It's very on brand for America. Hmm. But once you go down the long tail, you get spectrum of right. sexual identity. You get the spectrum of the black and brown experience. You get international. You get the beautiful
right, the
tapestry of
veins,
it all. Right. And then once you get in there, you're like, wow, this is a rich thing. And then it is. But then you get in there, you get 90% of the artists are black and brown, 10% of the executives are black and brown. So you get this weird plantation right, economics right. dynamic of like, who's really perpetuating these images? Who's directing these videos? I'm not really comfortable with this dynamic. You get this sort of NFL sort of vibe going on. And then your concerns become very clear because it's not you making these decisions. It's not me making these decisions. You're like, oh, this is different. And this is why I'm happy what we're doing here at Brick. Now you have many different people at the Brick table making these decisions. What we put out is going to be much more. It's going
like
to be much more
on brand, so to speak.
It's going to be right, Thanksgiving right, meal. Thanksgiving. It's going to be much more better.
So let's talk about these workforce development. And I think in a lot of ways, I was part of that, having been a community producer and then being able to get my show on NYC Life, as well as now, of course, this one, WNYE 91.5 FM. Talk about some of your free programs and then how you go into marginalized or underserved communities and help to bring them forward throughout all of this. Their needs forward, their economic needs. Yeah.
Right. So I think one of the things that people don't realize with what Brick does is going into, and I hope this is what you're getting at, Tony, is with our education programs, right? We are in, I want to say 37 schools bringing in media education and arts education to supplement things that the DOE are not able to do for various reasons. And it is specifically targeted into underrepresented and typically underserved districts that typically will lean more towards black and brown students, which I think is really great of really doing the tough work. And then with the building, with our adult education, we are bringing in folks. We are also inviting all of those folks into the building to take classes that average, I think the average cost of class, I want to say is $38. That gets you certified to use, million-dollar equipment for, the rest of your life that you can go and create content. So one of the things that my vision for Brick for the next wave is to really attack this really digital divide, right? That was
so
exacerbated
right,
by COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think we do well on that. We do very well on that. I want to be more conscious of it and attack it a little further because to what you're saying about workforce development, giving people marketable skills, not just jobs, but career skills on how to be podcast producers and how to use this equipment. That's how we're going to break the cycle of poverty. And I think Brick has been doing it long before I got here. And I think the concerts and the art and all these visible things that we do are wonderful. But there's a lot of really, really powerful stuff we do that are not so visible. So I think we're good on, not good, but that there's a lot of work been done on that. I want to lift the other stuff up so people can see both.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're talking with Wes Jackson, the new president of Brick, about his vision for the organization and also about the 50th anniversary Brooklyn Hip Hop Festival. I just want to add what you were saying about this workforce development, and it comes from perspective being a mentor at New Ink, the New Museum New Ink. It's a creative incubator for 5 years. Is that one of the things also that's great to add to that mixture is how to ask and how to present, because that's a powerful dynamic that, as yourself, it makes a big difference of, being able to get what you want out of your life and career.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about something, this disenfranchisement of POCs in the creative industries. Can you speak a little bit about what you mean with that? We kind of talked about it when we talked about rap music versus real hip hop culture. Where else are you seeing that?
Well, I don't want to get to the rap versus real hip hop because that's always weird. But like, just people can like what they want, and I don't want to be the old man waving their finger. But I think the level of, I don't know, Tony. Like, I feel like the disenfranchisement of people of culture is just when people of culture, people
no,
of color.
No, I got that. POC.
I like people of culture, though. That could be a thing.
I know, right? I thought about that.
Maybe we can keep it somewhere.
Right.
But I almost think of, like, it's been happening. When has it not been happening? You know? But I think in particular what I was trying to get at is I think we saw it spike in a very demonstrable way with COVID, right? You saw the access to Wi-Fi. If you didn't have access to Wi-Fi, you could see, you know, we're starting to see the drops in education, particularly in the youth. And I have, you know, kids who had friends and we were fortunate enough to, you know, have access to, you know, high-speed internet. But you had kids who, you know, had to sit out in front of the library with their phones trying to do the homework. And, you know, you can see the number of digital downloads and, you know, Park Slope at Carroll Gardens through the roof, East New York and Brownsville, you know, in the teens.
Wow.
So you can just almost watch, like, this kid is going to be behind. And
Absolutely.
This kid just got a head start. So what's going to happen when they get to be 20 when it comes to SATs and exams? So this is what I want to start to attack. It's this physical infrastructure, you know.
And you did some things during COVID. There were things done where the television stations, I think, had DOE was using them. Can you comment on that a bit?
Yes. And this is obviously before my tenure, but Brick, this is where Brick jumped on this and was working with the DOE to run classes using our channels. This is what public access and free speech were doing. I imagine this room that we were in were being used to attack, you know, the digital divide. I don't think that was the words that were being used at the time, but Brick has been in this space from day one. I just don't think we were looking at it, you know, really that way. But public access has always been about this, right?
Absolutely.
And you could probably speak to this better than I can. So, and we've been using those cables in the ground to bring people into our room, to train them so they could put their information for free out on these channels.
And that's the for free piece that people,
that's the free, but free speech.
The barrier to entry is really low here. It's very low. You can just get here, start doing the work and put it out there.
And it needs to be lower and lower and lower and lower. And that's how we want to attack it. And I want to go even further. And then to your other question, I want to go do better about bringing the mountain to Muhammad and say, okay, if you can't come into the building, I want to do better to coming out to you. Then I want to get you into the building because it's only, you can just see it. It's going to get bad in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we got to get on it. Mm-hmm.
So I have a little bit of a trick question, but it's not on the test, so I wouldn't worry about it. it's more of a visioning exercise looking back in 3 years from now. Like if we met, you know, at lunch or something, not poached eggs. And we said, okay, you know, we were celebrating something and we say, okay, what does Brick look like 3 years now? If, for example, you had all the money you need, there wasn't consequences.
Looking back, I think if I could have been here, the version of me would have said, that we would have, you know, something like a Brick Celebrate Brooklyn would have, you know, stabilized the income structure, maybe gotten some long-term sponsors in, and because I think that's that's like the best property. I mean, that's where I come from, right? I think Brick Celebrate Brooklyn is the best property in the game.
It's fabulous because it's free. How's that? And it's great entertainment, you know? Yeah.
This is the yearly festival.
It's incredible on so many levels,
but I'm just thinking about any, it's so democratic. Anybody can walk in and get something.
And walk in, but that, to think about this, my other nerd thing is public transportation.
Yes.
It's better than, you know, whatever you want to call it, the Coachellas and the Bonnaroos and all that other stuff. Because you get off the F train or the G train and walk in. You don't have to take a car. You don't need a hotel, right? We are in the city. We're a part of the city. No one else can say it like that. It's free. It's multiple times a week. It's diverse programming. It is the diversity that people long for who don't live in Brooklyn. It is the heart and soul of Brooklyn. I'm just going to be honest. I have a theory. You want to hear my theory, Tony?
I would love to.
I don't think celebrate Brooklyn and vis-a-vis us, and I'm biased, of course, gets enough credit. What makes Brooklyn special? Two things. It's that concert series and Spike Lee movies. Because if you don't live in Brooklyn, it's the only two things that capture the mythology of this place. Like, if you just get off the plane and be like, show me this thing that makes this place so special. It's the Spike Lee movies and that brownstone Brooklyn. That's what you want. And is walking in on 9th Street. Because you cross that threshold at 9th Street and you're like, if you don't live in Brooklyn and you just come from Boston or North Dakota and you cross that 9th Street threshold, you're like, we don't have this, any version of this. And then it's like, oh, wait, come back on Wednesday. Oh, and then come back on Friday. Oh, and then come back on Saturday. And bing, bong, boom. Three times in 1 week, I've changed your life. Nobody else could do that.
You know, I'm listening to you and I'm saying to myself, this guy is so excited about Brooklyn.
I do get a little loud.
Yes, no, that's fine. So what excites you about Brooklyn outside of what you're contributing through Brick? What is it? What is the connection that you feel about this place? Because didn't you grow up in Harlem?
I grew up in the Bronx.
See, so you're not from Brooklyn.
See, why you gotta...
Well, I am. I'm born in Brooklyn.
Can you kick her under the table for me now? Okay. So you've ruined my whole rap now.
That's why you got to sit closer.
All my friends in the Bronx are like, dude, when you gonna, you acting all of this stuff and this BX. But I think what I would say to this is that what really excites me about Brooklyn, and, you know, prior to this, I was teaching up at Boston and I was still living in Brooklyn. I was going up and down. And I thought about moving. You know this, Tony, that I was going to move. We were going to move to Boston. My wife was in higher ed and COVID hit. And then we were like, well, I guess we don't really have to move because teaching was in here. Boston ain't Brooklyn.
No way.
It ain't Brooklyn.
Boston.
And
no,
I thought
not.
About it and I just looked around and I said, do I want to raise my kids in that environment? And then I looked my whole life is weirdly hyper local, right? Mm-hmm. I live not too far from here. My kids go to school, you know, not too, you know, within about 3-4 square miles, the coffee shop, the barber shop, the doctor, you know, the lacrosse team, the football team, the cheer team. And I just think about how that is and how truly diverse it is. There's white kids, there's Jewish kids, there's lesbians, there's gay, mm-hmm. there's trans kids, there's this, that, and the third. And then every time I get on that train in Boston, and I don't know if you've ever been to Boston. Boston is like, mm-mm.
No, I'm from there. I know the
white kids over there, black kids over there, rich kids over there, poor kids over there, and the two shall not meet. And I just was like, yeah, I don't like this. I want to go back to this weird, even it's a little gentrified and it's not a Nirvana, but Brooklyn is, and again, I go back to like Brick Celebrate Brooklyn. You can get a little weird. You can Excellent. Go and see Virgil and then you can go see Lynn Nottage. It is
where it's at. And I'm very happy that we've had this conversation with you. You're a thought leader, okay? You are a thought leader. And I'm excited about what you're going to be bringing to Brooklyn, all right? Because we heard your plans and we're behind you.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.